Blog Talk Radio.
Hello and welcome to Progressive News Network Extra. My name is Brooke Hines. I'll be with you for just a little while tonight. We're doing a new thing called Progressive News Network Extra. And the extra is that we got more stuff than we can cover on Sundays. So we're going to cover a little bit more during the week. And I'm here to do that. When you hear that music, that swampy music, you know that I'm getting ready to go live at the studios here at Swampy J's. So you got the swampy music. That's the extra music. That's what's extra. You get the swamp music. But today, there's so much extra to talk about. So it's Wednesday, September 25, and yesterday, on Tuesday, Nancy Pelosi signaled that, made a statement that she was amenable, that she was going to open an impeachment inquiry. And today we got another story from Politico on how the focus of that inquiry will be fairly narrow. I put this in my thread on Twitter as a reference, but there it is. She's hoping to keep a narrow focus just on the Trump-Ukraine scandal, and we'll get into in a second what the Trump-Ukraine scandal actually is. But what she's found in after calling the caucus together, what she found is that there is unanimity, that there is a consensus that on the subject of this telephone transcript and Trump soliciting some help from Ukraine in looking into possible involvement of Joe Biden, calling off a prosecutor that would have been looking into his son Hunter Biden's dealings with a gas company. The Democrats think that there is enough pluses having to do with that to go ahead and open up an inquiry. So it's not clear. It's not clear if this will become full impeachment proceedings. It looks like first what they're going to do is have this inquiry. We're at the end of September. We've got October, November, December. November and December pretty much fly when it comes to congressional work and business work, because those are the holidays and people tend to take off. So with just essentially 3 months left in the year, if they decide to pick up impeachment, this is going to go into 2020. This is going to become an issue for the 2020 elections. And I think that's significant for left coalitions who want to see any number of candidates, most notably Bernie Sanders, be able to get their messages across. So, you know, there's a lot of factions within the Democratic primary. I've mentioned a few times that I'm 100% behind Bernie Sanders, and I was in 2016. And I think, too, that regardless of how this primary shakes out, Medicare for All and the policies that he's putting out there, those aren't going away. The movement isn't going away. And this is one of the things that he's done that has just been spectacularly intelligent. It's the kind of thing you haven't seen in U.S. politics since I've been alive. You know, there was the opportunity during the Obama administration to pick up where his very innovative campaign left off with their amazing mailing list and their amazing engaged activists who were on the ground. There was the opportunity to pick that up and to create a movement out of that. And instead of doing that, Rahm Emanuel referred to, you know, the people who wanted to see that done as effing retards. So, you know, you get a sense from the Obama administration exactly how much we were valued and how much a movement was valued by them. And you know, you can imagine that came straight down from the same people who identified all the Citigroup people who would be on the on his cabinet. They weren't about to allow a movement to push any agenda surrounding Obama because they had their own agenda. But is the left right now in American politics? We have an agenda. And we want to talk about things like Medicare for All and rent control and tuition-free state college. There's a lot of issues that are meat and potato issues, putting food on the table kind of stuff that need to get done for the American people. And this is kind of stuff that we've been talking about since the 90s. You know, this is single payer healthcare has been something we've been talking about forever, doing some reform with regard to housing and reeling in student debt is all of this, you know, is stuff that gets talked about during campaign season. But then you get your usual, you know, Democratic elite leader elected, and nothing seems to happen. And so this cycle, 2020, is very interesting because you've got Bernie Sanders followed by Elizabeth Warren. They seem to be singing the same tune, but they're not really, you know. Elizabeth Warren is more about finding the corrupt bad apples, while Bernie Sanders is more about fixing a system. Now, how much do you think we're going to be talking about fixing a system that is broken for Americans if we're doing impeachment proceedings in the House? Because, I mean, right now, if you turn on MSNBC, which happens to be on in my living room, they're talking about impeachment. And they're more than happy to talk about impeachment for the next they talked about Russiagate for 2 years, so they'll talk about this for God knows how long. That's, you know, that is easy for them. It's non-political. It is not anything that's going to cost any oligarch in the United States one red cent, okay? Impeachment is the fight that they want to have because it gets them off the hook from doing the things that we need to get done. So having said that, let's talk a little bit about what is on the table with this Ukrainian deal. What is this all about? The people who are calling for impeachment, the people who were hot about Russiagate, want to tie the two together because what's at issue here is Donald Trump being on the phone to the new president of Ukraine, President Zelensky, and there's a particular phone call that occurred on July 25 of this year from 9:03 to 9:33, so about a half an hour they were on the phone, and the transcripts were released today after some fanfare. You know, there was some bit of going back and forth, and Donald Trump didn't want to release them, and then he was like, okay, I'll release, you know, here you go. And so we've got five pages of mostly mundane kind of stuff that you would imagine two world leaders to be batting back and forth, like, oh, I'm really glad to talk to you because you're a super powerful guy, and I'm really glad to talk to you because you're somebody I want something from. Okay, let's have a transaction. All right, blah, blah, blah. The items here, however, that are of interest in an impeachment inquiry is on page 2 at the bottom. President Zelensky says that he would like to thank Trump for his great support in the area of defense, and we are ready to continue to cooperate for the next step. Specifically, we are almost ready to buy more javelins from the United States for defense purposes. Javelin is a javelin missile. And if you're watching this, if you've clicked on a link and you're looking at the little slideshow, I put an image in there of what a javelin missile looks like. It's one of those things that's launched from someone's shoulder. It takes off like a little cruise missile. It's got its own little guidance system or whatever. It's not just it's not like a bullet. It doesn't just propel to its destination. It's smarter than that. So Donald Trump says back to him right after he talks about the javelin missiles. Here's Donald Trump saying, I would like you to do us a favor, though, because our country has been through a lot and Ukraine knows a lot about it. And he here it is. Here's the money, y'all. I would like you to find out what happened with this whole situation with Ukraine. They say CrowdStrike, .. For some reason, there's the rest of that sentence doesn't exist. I guess you have one of your wealthy people, .. The server, they say Ukraine has it. Okay. What is he talking about here? He's asking Zelensky to look into a situation with CrowdStrike. One of the co-owners of CrowdStrike is Ukrainian, I believe. I don't think that I'm positive that CrowdStrike is not located in Ukraine. There's the matter of who provided the emails to WikiLeaks, and CrowdStrike had their information was showing that it was Russian in nature, and then we found out that the report that CrowdStrike gave to the court was only a draft and nobody was able to see it. And there's a big fight over that. So that really kind of looks thin. So here's Trump saying, in a real garbled sense, it looks like he is asking for a transaction. He's asking for a favor, having to do with CrowdStrike and having to do with locating information about the server. Now, there was another instance with Ukraine and CrowdStrike having to do with CrowdStrike did a report that said that Russia was able to hack military equipment within the Ukraine and to disable something like 80% of their artillery. And that report turned out to be false. Voice of America reported on this, and I want to say it was 2017. I got the story right here. Cyber firm at center of Russian hacking charges misread data. March 21, 2017, this is Voice of America, an influential British think tank and Ukraine's military are disputing a report that the U.S. cybersecurity firm CrowdStrike has used to buttress its claims of Russia hacking in the presidential election. The CrowdStrike report released in December asserted that Russians hacked into a Ukrainian artillery app, resulting in heavy losses of howitzers in Ukraine's war with Russian-backed separatists. But the International Institute for Strategic Studies, the IISS, told Voice of America that CrowdStrike erroneously used IISS data as proof of the intrusion. So So there's a sticky wicket there, and I'm not going to get into that too completely tonight because that is a really deep rabbit hole. Once the British side of this gets pulled in, things start to get really, really funky. Put this over here. So what we're dealing with right now is this telephone call. So he's asking about something for about CrowdStrike, and Zelensky says back, yeah, we'll look into it. And he says, and this is at the bottom of page 3, he says that you, Mr. President, have friends in our country so we can continue our strategic partnership. I also plan to surround myself with great people. And in addition to that investigation, I guarantee as the president of Ukraine that all the investigations will be done openly and candidly. That I can assure you, quote unquote. So Donald Trump asks for Zelensky to look into issues surrounding CrowdStrike. He goes on to say, I would like to have the Attorney General, that's Attorney General Barr, call you and your people, and I would like you to get to the bottom of it. As you saw yesterday, that whole nonsense ended with a very poor performance by a man named Robert Mueller, an incompetent performance, but they say a lot of it started with Ukraine. Whatever you can do, it's very important that you do it if it's possible. So, you know, again, this phone call happened on July 25 of this year. So this is as Mueller's investigation had wrapped up, and there was quite a bit having to do with Ukraine. I mean, Ukraine just keeps popping up in the middle of everything, and there's a lot of weird stuff around Ukraine. So, let's get finished with this phone call. This one other part that I highlighted here. This is where Donald Trump goes into a little bit more detail. Talking about Giuliani, and he says that he wants Giuliani, he says a lot of people are talking about that, the way they shut your very good prosecutor down and had some very bad people involved. Here he's talking about the Joe Biden thing, and I'll get to that in a second. He says, I heard you had a prosecutor who was very good, and he was shut down, and that's really unfair. A lot of people are talking about that, the way they shut down your very good prosecutor, and you had some very bad people involved. Donald Trump sounds like he just talks like a moron. Mr. Giuliani is a highly respected man. He was the mayor of New York City, a great mayor, and I would like him to call you. I will ask him to call you along with the Attorney General. God, I cannot believe this guy is a president. Anyway, he goes on. Rudy knows very much about what's happening, and he is a very capable man. If you could speak to him, that would be great. The former ambassador of the United States, the woman, was bad news, and the people she was dealing with in the Ukraine were bad news. So I just want to let you know that. The other thing, there's a lot of talk about Biden's son, that Biden stopped the prosecution, and a lot of people want to find out about that. So whatever you can do with the Attorney General would be great. Biden went around bragging that he had stopped the prosecution. So if you could look into that, it sounds horrible to me. So here you have Donald Trump, the President of the United States, soliciting assistance from a foreign leader to look into the goings on of a former vice president in the Ukraine. Now, remember that Joe Biden, as vice president, was assigned as the point person to Ukraine after the annexation of Crimea. So he was very involved in the intrigue, in the political aspects of what was going on, as well as the military aspects of what was going on. Now, Donald Trump right there referred to Joe Biden bragging about how he stopped the prosecution. And I'm going to play this for you. We've got it queued up right here. This is Joe Biden bragging about.
I remember going over convincing our team or others to convincing us that we should be providing for loan guarantees. And I went over, I guess, the 12th, 13th time to Kyiv, and I was supposed to announce that there was another $1 billion loan guarantee. And I had gotten a commitment from Poroshenko and from Yatsenyuk that they would take action against the state prosecutor, and they didn't. So they said they were walking out to the press conference. Said, "No," I said, "I'm not going to. We're not going to give you the $1 billion." They said, "You have no authority. You're not the president." The president said, "I said, call him." I said, "I'm telling you, you're not getting $1 billion." I said, "You're not getting $1 billion. I'm going to be leaving here." I think it was what, 6 hours. I looked. I said, "I'm leaving in 6 hours. If the prosecutor's not fired, you're not getting the money." Oh, son of a. Got fired. And they put in place someone who was solid at the time. I remember going over.
Okay, so that is Joe Biden speaking January 23, 2018 at the Council of Foreign Relations. What you heard there was quite a transactional relationship. It was definitely tit for tat. It was, you know, you're not going to get the money that's promised to you if you don't get rid of this prosecutor. So who is this prosecutor and why does he matter so much? Why would Joe Biden care about this particular prosecutor? Well, it has to do arguably with his son Hunter Biden. Here's a story that was published September 21 in Politico by line Mark Caputo, Natasha Parecki, and Ben Schreckinger. So you got three bylines on this one story. It's not terribly long, but they start out because Mark Caputo's a Florida Politico reporter. He starts out talking to Andrew Gillum and getting Andrew Gillum's take on things. So whatever with that. But he gets to the meat of the Biden stuff kind of halfway through the piece. And he says, he leads into this by talking about how at first this team of writers felt like Biden wasn't handling this information coming from Trump having to do with Ukraine and Hunter Biden, that he wasn't dealing with it too well. And then there was a pivot. And the pivot came on Friday evening when Biden's campaign put out a fundraising ask using this information, using this imbroglio to fundraise after. And so his fundraising letter says, or email says, "This sort of behavior tells you everything you need to know about Donald Trump and the people around him. It also tells you what he's worried about. However, even before Biden began running, Republicans, as well as Democrats affiliated with his primary rivals, said the imbroglio with Hunter Biden would help the president neutralize tax attacks against him, even if it paled next to the voluminous evidence of Trump's transgressions." You know, Trump has proved in the past that he is able to bat down just all kinds of dirt that is on him by shifting the focus to some other thing that his rival has. So if he can prove, this is like, you know, when you're in junior high school and the high school kids wanted you to smoke a cigarette with them so you wouldn't be able to rat them out, like that's kind of what this is. You know, he tries to find the one thing that is is unethical that he can smear the other person with, because that will neutralize the attacks on him. At least he thinks it's worked that way in the past. And surprisingly, I was listening to John Nichols, who wrote pretty much the book on modern impeachment, talking about how good Trump is at doing this. And you could hear that what he was saying was that he was reticent, that he was afraid, you know, that it's dicey. It's dicey going up against Trump when Trump thinks that he has some kind of dirt in his back pocket that he can pull out. So I was a little shocked to hear John Nichols say that, because, you know, it shows that there's reticence in terms of style, that the style is a problem. The Democrats have trouble responding to this style of attack and this style of rivalry. And so we'll see. For months, Biden has sidestepped questions about his son's business dealings, which were criticized when they were reported in 2015 by both the New York Times as well as Russian state news. Let me go on. The controversy can be traced back to March 2014, when Russia annexed the Crimea Peninsula in eastern Ukraine, setting off an international crisis. The administration's point man on Ukraine, Biden, led the U.S. response. And then that April, so March 2014, 1 month later in April, Biden's son Hunter was appointed to the board of Burisma Holdings, a Ukrainian natural gas company, and he was appointed despite lacking substantive experience working in Ukraine or working in the energy sector or just working, and received compensation reported as $50,000 a month. That's quite a salary for not knowing what you're doing. And never having had experience in those sectors. And that looks really bad. That looks really bad that Joe Biden's son, Joe Biden's the point man on Ukraine, and a month earlier, you know, was, beating back this whole mess with the annexation of Crimea. And then all of a sudden, a month later, his son shows up in the middle of a gas company, on the board of a gas company that is under investigation by a Ukrainian prosecutor. It goes on. At the time, Burisma was seeking to build inroads to U.S. Democrats as it faced investigative scrutiny. The same month Hunter Biden joined Burisma, the UK government froze bank accounts that allegedly belonged to its owner, the owner of the gas company, as part of a money laundering investigation. So you've got the US and specifically US Democrats on one side who are being feted, you know, who are being Ukrainian energy sector oligarchs are trying to get on their side strategically. You have that happening, and at the same time, you know, we're over there, you know, trying to deal with the annexation of Crimea. And you know, this is where a lot of the Russia stuff could intersect, you know, because even though Russiagate didn't produce any fruit, and it seems that it was pretty much based on a lot of hooey or whatever, what the Democratic Party elites are going to do, they are going to use this to say that Trump was holding back significant military investments in Ukraine that would help in our defense against our mortal enemy Russia. So that's kind of how this is playing out. And you know, it's it's up to the audience to decide if Russia is a mortal enemy of the United States, and that what goes on along the eastern border of Ukraine affects anything having to do with our life in the United States as Americans. I mean, just figure that out for yourself. I don't see it, but you know, maybe there's something I'm not seeing because I'm not seeing it. Hunter Biden has said that he was not involved in the investigations, and spokespeople for Joe Biden have said his son's dealings did not influence his official actions, and no evidence has emerged of wrongdoing in the matter. You know, kind of blah, 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 the boilerplate, blah, 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 blah. And then there's this real interesting thing at the end where Biden's campaign also appears ready to turn the issue into a referendum about the news media. Like, what? Okay. So you're trying to differentiate yourself from Donald Trump. However, you're embroiled in a controversy in the Ukraine along with Donald Trump. And in order to get yourself out from under this controversy in Ukraine that also involves Donald Trump, you're ripping a page from Donald Trump's playbook by yelling at the media. So here's Biden saying, this is actually a Biden top advisor who remains unnamed. The press is playing into Donald Trump's hands talking about this. This is not a Joe Biden problem. This is a Donald Trump problem. And David Axelrod, who's the last one mentioned in this article, David Axelrod says, bless his heart, that at least in the short run, it's more likely to identify Biden as the candidate that Trump fears, and perhaps Biden might even benefit, and the Democrats might benefit because this supposedly shows that Trump is scared of Biden. I would caution anyone from believing that Trump is scared of Joe Biden. I mean, if you've seen the Trump campaign actually put out a compilation of Joe Biden's and it wasn't all of them today. It was just a compilation of basic Joe Biden brain malfunctions, just one right after another. I tell you what, Donald Trump wants to go up against Joe Biden. You know, this is not something that he fears. But, you know, that makes great copy. If I was David Axelrod, if I was any of these guys that was in positions of leadership in the grand consultancy of the Democratic Party, I would make sure to put on the biggest happy face that I possibly could and say that that all of this naturally, all of the benefit of this will accrue to us, and it will all stick to Trump, and it's all going to be fine in the end. That's what they're there to say. That's their gerb. So Ukraine is freaking interesting. You know, after Occupy, there was the coup. There was the 2014 coup in Ukraine, where the United States helped overthrow a democratically elected president, and we did that by arming and training and providing all kinds of assistance to a bunch of neo-Nazis, just flat out Nazis, because Nazis don't like Russians. Okay. So if you look at, again, if you're listening to the show from the link and you got the slideshow in front of you, I put a map of the Ukraine and the surrounding areas. And you can see that on the eastern side of the Ukraine, you've got Russia, a big whole bunch of Russia. It's a giant country there. And historically, you know, all of this Eastern European stuff, the stuff that happened with Germany in World War I and World War II, you know, a lot of these fights, a lot of this animus and animosity, it's just never gone away, you know? And it's remained not just in the form like we're familiar with in the United States, where you know, drive out in the country and you see guys with pickup trucks and Confederate flags. That seems pretty tame. These guys are the blood and soil guys who the American white nationalists were imitating when they marched with torches in Charlottesville, chanting blood and soil, chanting we will not be replaced or something like that. They were using actual imagery and mottos and taglines from Maidan and from the neo-Nazis in Ukraine. And so, let's see, 2 days ago, and this is what I think I want to land on, and this is what I really wanted to get to in the midst of all of this, is that, you know, I'm perfectly comfortable with keeping an open mind with regard to impeachment. I'm comfortable with keeping an open mind with regard to, you know, if Biden gets taken down with Trump, if Trump gets taken down, if Trump doesn't get taken down, oh my gosh, this is just going to happen. And we're going to have to deal with it. And we're going to have to find a way to carry on a Democratic primary in a manner that serves the American people and isn't just a 24/7, a remake of Russiagate, which I'm afraid is getting ready to happen. But things are a little bit more clear when it comes to Ukraine. It's kind of easy to identify the bad guys in Ukraine. And the way that it's easy to identify the bad guys in Ukraine is they tattoo themselves with Nazi symbols. They call themselves they have provided names for themselves that refer to white nationalist movements. They identify as neo-Nazis. They really aren't cagey about this. So a couple days ago, 2 days ago, September 23 in the gray zone, Ben Norton dropped this really good article. You might remember that a couple of days ago, a soldier in the United States, a U.S. Army soldier, was arrested for plotting to make bombs and to bomb places, to do a bunch of bombing. And there's a lot more to it. So let's get into this. So Ben Norton's piece is entitled Bomb Plotting Extremist American Soldier tried to join U.S.-backed neo-Nazi militia in Ukraine. A far-right U.S. soldier arrested by the FBI for plotting domestic bomb attacks sought to join Ukraine's neo-Nazi Azov battalion, which was directly armed and advised by the American government. Whoa. So this guy, and he's just the latest example, okay? He's just the latest example of how Americans are looking to right-wing extremist white nationalists in the United States. Americans are looking to Ukraine, looking to go to Ukraine, as a matter of fact, to train with the neo-Nazis over there and come back over here and essentially try to start a war. So this guy is really bad news. Let's just get into this. A far-right soldier in the United States Army has been arrested by the FBI for plotting bomb attacks targeting American media outlets and Democratic politicians. Let me also say that he talked about killing members of Antifa, and there was a couple of other just stray things in there. Okay. The FBI said he had also planned to travel to Ukraine in order to join the Azov Battalion, a neo-Nazi militia that has for years been directly supported by the U.S. government. In its court filing, the FBI described the Azov Battalion as a violent far-right paramilitary group, yet failed to disclose that this fascist military has been armed and advised by American military officials in order to turn up the heat on Russia. You know, just stop right there. You know, get your red pen out and draw a giant circle around that paragraph. You know, we're arming them, we're training them, we are encouraging them because we believe that they serve our interests with regard to Russia. And doesn't this sound exactly like what's going on in Yemen right now with the United States backing the Al-Qaeda against the Houthis? You know, doesn't this sound like exactly what happened with ISIS and Syria and in so many different places? We get behind, time and time again, we get behind the right-wing crazies in order to advance our foreign policy. And at some point, we have to realize that our foreign policy is actually as right-wing and as fascist as the people that we're partnering with. Now, Ben Norton talks about this in terms of blowback, that when people like this are trained and they are trained in the ideology and then given the technical expertise to build bombs and so on and so forth, that the U.S. soldiers like this can be examples of what the intelligence agencies refer to as blowback when the U.S. government support for extremist foreign proxies fuels violent terrorism back at home. And remember, we were supposed to fight the terrorists over there so that they wouldn't come over here and fight us. But I'll be damned. It turns out it's our own soldiers who are coming back and wanting to bomb us. This is a problem, you know, and this is Ukraine. This hasn't happened, and this isn't coming out of Korea. This isn't coming out of any of the hundreds of other places that the United States has military involvement. This is happening in Ukraine, all right? So I'd like to know, you know, the Hunter Biden stuff is what it is. You know, I think that was pretty clearly, you know, getting his kid a job, whatever. But I'd like to know really what's going on ideologically with our military involvement in places like Ukraine. And, you know, why is it that we're funding and training and why are we on the side of the Nazis? Why do we always have to be on the side of the Nazis? That just doesn't seem cool to me. So this is bad news. Go find this article. It's Ben Norton, September 23. It's in the Gray Zone, fantastic independent source. There's so much more to this. I saw Ben Norton on Aaron Mattei's new show called Pushback. You can find that on YouTube. Aaron Mattei was also on, what's his name? The people who are following this story and who are really good at reporting on it have been out there just hitting it. So go out there and find them. Mattei is great. Gray Zone is great. Please check out Pushback, especially the most recent episode with Ben Norton. Where they're talking about this article and so much more, and so much more that pertains specifically to Hunter Biden. So I've got just a few more seconds and start some bumper music, but I want to thank you guys for tuning in. I want to let you know that we're going to be doing more of this. I want to let you know that tomorrow night we've got Slow News Day. Steve Poynikin, I'm going to do we're just going to chat. We're just going to sit back and do a slow news day style chat. And that'll be tomorrow night at 8 o'clock. Tune in then. And until then, oh, chill out, man. We'll see you tomorrow.